not. Thank you very much.
Yes.
So the next case on the calendar is Gerald Boynton versus State of Minnesota by and through the Department of Transportation. The case number is 822-0722. Counsel, you'll each have 15 minutes for your arguments and 5 minutes for rebuttal for appellant if you choose to use it. Please state your name for the record at the beginning of your argument and tell us who you're representing. With that, counsel for appellant, are you ready to begin?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
You may, and you can be seated.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Podium goes up and down if you want to adjust it. I see you've already figured that out.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court, the counsel. My name is Aaron Thome, and along with my co-counsel, Samantha Ellingson, I'm representing Gerald Boynton, who is the plaintiff and respondent in this case. The summary judgment order appealed from here was drafted by MnDOT, the defendant. I represent the plaintiff appellant. I think I misspoke. The order appealed from was drafted by the defendant respondent, MnDOT. There's no indication that the district court actually performed any analysis. There's no indication that the district court found any facts or reached any conclusions of law independent of MnDOT's advocacy. There's no indication that the evidence in the record that supports Mr. Boynton's claims was even considered by the district court. Both this court and the Supreme Court have consistently held that where a district court adopts verbatim proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, that is discouraged. And in the instance that that occurs, as it happened here, this court is to conduct a searching and careful review of the record. And that review here compels reversal. The district court granted summary judgment on two grounds as requested by MnDOT. And the first was the issue of discretionary or statutory immunity. Now, that's the exception to the general rule that a governmental entity is liable for the torts it commits. This court and the Supreme Court have made clear that is to be construed narrowly. It's an exception to the rule. On that issue, the district court resolved factual disputes against my client, weighed disputed facts, ultimately just adopted MnDOT's analysis. That was error, as I will explain. The district court also resolved the issue of proximate cause, which is an issue for the jury, weighed disputed facts, and agreed with MnDOT's proposed findings. That was also error.
I have a question kind of out of the gate. I want to make sure that I understand your arguments. You have a failure to warn argument, and then I wasn't quite sure if it's a defective construction or maintenance. I couldn't quite follow it. So with regard to that, what is your allegation there?
It's a failure to warn, Your Honor. It's a failure to warn of the dangerous condition, specifically.
So you're not saying that the road was designed and constructed or maintained in a defective way.
That is not what the challenge is.
Okay.
Taking the condition of the road as it was July 15, 2017, when the accident occurred, it was dangerous, and there needed to be a warning sign. MnDOT specifically has a sign policy where if there's a drop in the shoulder that exceeds 3 inches for a continuous length along the roadway and a significant length along the roadway, it is to apply engineering judgment, which is not subject to immunity, to determine, to place a sign there warning motorists of the dangerous condition. That's not disputed. That's their sign policy. That's the policy that we were asking be applied in this case, should have been applied in this case. It was not. Now, I think where Your Honor is seeing the waters get a bit muddied is what MnDOT is now trying to argue is, hey, we understand our sign policy is what it is. We understand that we're not going to get immunity for failing to apply our own sign policy. So we're going to start talking about what they're referring to as a maintenance policy. And by that, what I think MnDOT is trying to argue is, And it's taken right from their main case that they cite, Minder, where in Minder there was an inspection and maintenance policy, and Minder involved a pothole. And in that case, which is readily distinguishable from this case, there was no knowledge on the part of the county of this specific pothole. And the plaintiff in that case tried to argue constructive notice, didn't try to argue actual notice at all, and it was determined because the county in Minder had a specific policy, and it's in our briefing, we've laid it out for the court, as to balancing social, political, and economic factors, and specifically what those factors were and how they weighed into the analysis to determine, okay, this part of the road needs investigation and we need to do something to, for example, take care of potholes. And in that case, they were able to show that the specific road where this pothole was located was not a priority pursuant to the policy that they articulated clearly in Minder. What MnDOT has done in this case is they've tried to latch on to that Minder analysis and said, hey, trust us, we have a policy. They've never articulated what the policy is. They just say they have a maintenance policy. They don't say we balance social, political, economic factors, and here's why Trunk Highway 30 at the place where Mr. Boitnot was thrown from the road because he couldn't reaccess the shoulder, they never said, we have a reason why we have never done anything about that shoulder. We have a reason why we, according to them, don't have even the knowledge to apply our sign policy. MnDOT does not deny, it's in their brief at page 12, that they have an affirmative obligation to review roads I'll read it. It is the responsibility of the sub-area supervisor to review roads in their sub-area as time and conditions permit, look for areas that need attention. They don't deny that they have this obligation. They've never explained why they weren't able to do this with respect to Trunk Highway 30 where Mr. Boitnot was injured. That prevents the county, or MnDOT, excuse me, from claiming immunity. They're not entitled to it. It's their burden. They need to show exactly what factors analysis they undertook. It's clear in Conlin, Olmanson, Nussbaum, the court consistently says, you need to articulate. You can't just simply say, we have a policy, we balance social, political, economic factors, period. They say that's not sufficient. You can't just parrot back language from the case law and expect that you're going to get immunity for doing that.
Well, they argue on page 13 that you did not dispute at the district court maintenance and sign policies are subject to statutory discretionary immunity.
That's not correct. That's a misstatement. What our client has asked is that they follow their sign policy. We've never said that. And, you know, MnDOT has never gotten to the point where they say, here's the analysis that we did under our sign policy, because they don't get to their sign policy, and they acknowledge this. They say in their briefing, we never made a decision whether or not to post a sign. We never made that decision. Well, the reason that they claim they didn't make the decision is they claim lack of knowledge. And again, Minder controls on that issue and says, if you're going to claim that you who have the responsibility to take care of roads, if you're going to claim lack of information about it, you need to explain why it is that your inspection policy was, you know, allocating resources elsewhere and not to this particular danger. And there's another issue on knowledge that I would like to talk about, because this is an alternative reason why summary judgment was inappropriately granted. There are numerous facts in the record that lead to, at the very least, a circumstantial determination that MnDOT had actual knowledge of this dangerous condition.
I don't know if you're talking about the neighbor's driveway where the accident occurred or near where it happened. And he said that the state patrol had been out 6 times on reported accidents.
That's one fact, Your Honor. Yes, the neighbor under oath, and it's in the record, said that at least 6 times vehicles had left the road and ended in accidents at the point where Mr. Boitnot's motorcycle left the road. And law enforcement, the state patrol, had come out and seen that and taken note of it.
The piece that I was curious about, I didn't see it in the record, and I'm hoping that you can help me with this. Did the state patrol then tell MnDOT about that? How did MnDOT find out about those accidents?
Well, I'll answer that in two parts. First of all, MnDOT keeps records of accidents, and this is separate and distinct from the six, but it and we put it in our briefing, there are at least 20 runoff accidents in this area, this stretch of the roadway. So MnDOT has those records. Now, the defendant in this case is the state of Minnesota, by and through MnDOT. State Patrol is part of the state of Minnesota.
So you're saying we have, in criminal law, it's presumed that if one law enforcement officer knows something, all of the rest know it, it's imputed to them? Are you saying that the State Patrol's accident report should be imputed to MnDOT?
Yes. Yes, I am saying that. And this is only one of many reasons why we are arguing that MnDOT had actual knowledge. MnDOT also drove the road itself April of 2017, a few months before the accident, created a video log, which is also in MnDOT's records. MnDOT acknowledges that its own maintenance forces have maintained this stretch of roadway. Maintenance is defined to include shoulder work, specifically looking to avoid shoulder drop-offs. We've elaborated on these arguments a lot in the briefing, so I don't want to simply just repeat it. I'm happy to answer any questions about this actual knowledge piece, but suffice it to say, MnDOT wrote the proposed findings. Of course, MnDOT didn't include information that would have given MnDOT the actual notice that we're arguing here. And for that reason, that's yet another fact issue that it was inappropriately resolved on summary judgment. So moving to the issue of proximate cause.
If I could ask you a question about that before you go there, counsel, and it's just a threshold question. So if we disagree with your analysis on discretionary statutory immunity and would uphold that, that is a legal decision, right? De novo review on statutory immunity. Do we need to reach the proximate cause issue if we disagree with you on the first?
Your Honor, if you disagree with my arguments on discretionary statutory immunity, you would not need to reach proximate cause.
Thank you.
But to touch on the issue of proximate cause, this is another instance of MnDOT just injecting its facts into the record and then ignoring Mr. Boynott's.
And you also submitted a proposed order for the district court at the summary judgment stage.
Yes, correct. So, first of all, MnDOT likes to focus on the narrow shoulder. They constantly talk about the fact that there was a sign, you know, miles or, you know, a ways back from where this accident occurred saying that the shoulder narrows. Yes, true. And that
I thought it was windy road.
Yep.
30 miles per hour. Is that the sign you're talking about?
Yes. And I believe that there's also an indication that the shoulder narrows. But whether or not there is, one of MnDOT's arguments is, well, the shoulder was narrow for a long time, so you could have seen it. And they analogize to this Holmquist case. But that's not on point. The real issue here was a convergence of three different dangers. And the first is the fact that this was an off-camber turn, which is unique. Normally turns bank so that you're riding the turn, not riding into the ditch. This one threw you toward the ditch, which is not easy to see from the naked eye. Most humans cannot detect that. That's the first. The second is the fact that the shoulder was very narrow there. The third is this sudden drop in the shoulder, which Mr. Boynott could not see. And he specifically stated under oath, he was riding side by side with another motorcyclist, which is legal in Minnesota. And he would not have done that, and he also would not have attempted to access the shoulder had he known about this dangerous condition. If there was a sign that said, the specific sign that's in MnDOT's sign policy that warns of shoulder drop-offs, had that sign been there, he wouldn't have been riding side by side at that turn, because he looks for that kind of thing, and if he sees that kind of thing, he knows what to do. You get in single file. And he would never have tried to access the shoulder. He would only do that if he believed the shoulder was safe. So MnDOT has just simply disregarded that, and they claim that by riding side by side, which Mr. Boynott has a right to do, the Minnesota legislature has specifically stated in statute 169.974 subdivision 5E that is permitted. That does, at the very least, that raises a fact issue, at the very least. But by simply disregarding Mr. Boynott's facts, that is another error.
This is a small thing, Mr. Tone, but I thought I saw on the record, and I thought it was your expert, who, there's a picture of a measuring device, a yardstick or something, and showing the drop-off in the shoulder area. And it seemed to me the district court, and again, perhaps adopting findings, but concluded that it was not 3 or more inches, that it was less, based on this depiction. Am I correct in that?
That's the conclusion that MnDOT put in the proposed order that the judge signed. That's disputed.
But is there an actual exhibit that shows this, the length of this drop-off?
Yes, and both that picture and the expert's analysis of it. The expert has put in the record that there was a drop-off that exceeds 3 inches that continue for a continuous significant length on the roadway, Your Honor.
And is that shown? That my specific question is that demonstrated by this measuring device?
Yes.
Okay.
It wasn't real clear to me, the measuring device, as to how many inches. I couldn't tell what the measurements were.
Yes, Your Honor. And that is an issue that we're at the threshold level of immunity right now. Now we're talking about the merits of this case.
Well, I understand that.
Right. Yes. But that's where we need to go. And, you know, that needs to be tried, and there needs to be a finding on that that's actually taking both sides' evidence into consideration. So I see I'm out of time, Your Honors. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. I am Ben Herringa, here for respondent, Minnesota Department of Transportation. The district court granted MnDOT's motion for summary judgment on 2 independent grounds. First, that MnDOT's policies and conduct were protected by statutory discretionary immunity. And second, that MnDOT was not a proximate cause of Boitnot's injuries. Today, MnDOT asks that you affirm the lower court's judgment and grant MnDOT summary judgment.
Well, I'm really troubled that the district court adopted wholesale your client's findings of fact and conclusions of law.
I understand, Your Honor, but ultimately the clear and searching threshold that was argued by appellant's counsel today, that's irrelevant. It wasn't for a case that has de novo review. The standard is de novo review. There is no clear and searching standard. Ultimately, de novo is what binds or what guides us today. This case is exactly why we have statutory discretionary immunity. MnDOT behaved exactly how we want our agencies to behave. They weighed policy considerations to determine policies and then executed those policies. The legislature created...
I want to back up to that statement. What in the record demonstrates there was weighing of policies in this case when they claim they did not know about this hazard?
Your Honor, there's two different decision points that I think are at times confused throughout the discussion. There's the decision point in which MnDOT made the decision to adopt its overall policy regarding maintenance and signage. That is found in respondents' addendum in the Fischbach Declaration. Policy is that MnDOT will respond to maintenance issues to patrol and evaluate the condition of all highways at all times. In the state of Minnesota, there are 29,169 miles of trunk highway. For context, that is the same distance as it takes to circle both the globe and almost all the way around the moon.
I don't mean to interrupt you, Mr. Herringer, but I may have misunderstood you. I thought you were saying in this specific case, there was weighing of factors.
Not in this particular case. There was no weighing of factors to say we are or are not going to fix this allegedly dangerous shoulder because MnDOT was unaware that there was an allegedly dangerous shoulder. The MnDOT also argues that there wasn't an allegedly dangerous shoulder, but even if there were, that decision was never made aware to MnDOT, and that decision wasn't made.
I'm looking at Fischbach's declaration, and he deals with maintenance.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you saying that signage is a subset of maintenance?
There,
even though it doesn't talk about signs in his declaration?
The sign I apologize, Your Honor. The sign policy is found in the Sang Declaration. That should also be a part of Respondent's Addendum. So there are 3 policies that are provided in Respondent's Addendum. It's important to note those aren't all of the policies in play today. There are also policies that were in the MTEM, the MUTCD, but the 3 most germane policies are found in respondent's addendum. That is the overall policy that requires that MnDOT respond to maintenance issues, that respond to issues as they are made aware. There are also two kind of sub-policies that guide what they do when they're made aware. There is a maintenance policy and a sign policy. The maintenance policy is that MnDOT balances factors such as cost of needed repair, the risk to the public, and the priority of the roadway, whereas the sign policy is that the sign office will weigh safety and financial concerns to determine whether or not to post the sign.
Well, appellant's counsel argues that you represent the state, albeit a subsection of the state, and that the state, through the state patrol, knew about the accidents that happened in the exact spot.
Your Honor, that brings us to another concerning point that plagues today's realities, and that appellant raises numerous issues for the first time on appeal. This issue was not brought up until the sixth of six briefs for summary judgment, three at the district court, and then in the very third, in the very last appellant brief, in the reply brief, that is when this was argued before the court for the very first time. First, appellant's argument is false. If you look at the case law, Meriwether, Minnesota Land and Timber LLC, the state, 818 Northwest 2nd, 557. And again, that wasn't in our brief because we didn't have a brief to respond to with which we could reply. That clearly is not the state of the case law. Agencies act on their own behalf. A doctor at DHS does not have the same imputed knowledge as a maintenance worker at MnDOT does not have the same knowledge that I, as an assistant attorney general, have. That's nonsensical. And for this reason, the MnDOT asks that you waive all arguments that were not made at the district level, because if MnDOT were able to approach this issue at the district level, we would have created a sufficient factual record to address this issue. It's a bit frustrating that this is being brought up in the sixth of six reply briefs, because it's not the first time that we've dealt with this issue. The original complaint was against the state of Minnesota and also Fillmore County. After corresponding with Boitnot's district court counsel, the complaint was amended to be against MnDOT, and ultimately Fillmore County was removed. For that reason, but also for another reason, and these are just the two most egregious examples of when when Boitnot argues for the first time at the appellate level that prejudices MnDOT. And the other instance that comes to mind is in their opening appellate brief, they argue that a guardrail was placed at the exact spot of Boitnot's crash. This simply is not true. And if MnDOT had been able to address this at the district court, they would have created a requisite record to address this point. And ultimately, by not being able to create that record, MnDOT was prejudiced because they were not able to address it fully. Now, I think in our response brief,
I apologize for interrupting, but since you are making a point about what was in the record and what was not in the record, or what was argued and not argued, I just want to be clear. So, MnDOT's records do reveal 20 runoff accidents occurred between, let's see, what is that, 86 to 2017, roughly this stretch of highway. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that was in the record and before the court?
It was, evidence, Your Honor.
On summary judgment? Okay.
It was, Your Honor.
And that is an argument made?
Yes,
right?
Your Honor.
Okay. Now, what about, are you narrowing it down to just the affidavit of the landowner who talks about the six occasions over the year where a motor vehicle left the roadway on the same area that Mr. Boitnot's motorcycle left the roadway? Is that the new piece, the argument that they did not make in district court until later?
Correct, Your Honor. The argument that the neighbors make MnDOT, the neighbors, or that MnDOT would have known of these runoff accidents.
You did not have a chance to reply to that argument in district court? That the neighbor's affidavit, is that what you're saying?
Not that this argument was made. The neighbor's affidavits were part of the district court, but that argument wasn't made. Even though there is some information at the district court, I encourage the Court of Appeals to take a discerning look at what was actually argued at the district court, because even though there was information from the neighbors, the argument that MnDOT had, not constructive knowledge, actual knowledge, was never made at the district court.
Okay, thank you.
And importantly, you brought up those crashes. I want to address that just briefly. So there were about 35 crashes in that two-mile stretch from mile markers. I believe it was 248 to 250. In the tenth of a mile around the crash, which was 248.6, in the last 35 years, there have been three crashes. One of those crashes was caused by a deer. The other involved frost or ice, and the other involved snow. Those crashes were in 1995, 1996, and 2009. To argue that MnDOT should have had actual knowledge of a dangerous shoulder because of those crashes is nonsensical. Of course, MnDOT is not arguing, and this is argued in our brief, that there was a danger on that stretch of road. That's why MnDOT posted the winding road sign. Ultimately, they understood that this part of Minnesota is incredibly windy. This stretch of Highway 30 is incredibly windy. We're not arguing that there was no danger, but the danger was not that there was a dangerous drop off or a narrow shoulder.
Was there also a reduced speed sign at this section of the roadway?
There was, Your Honor.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Now, Appellant's counsel tries to argue that Minder is not on all fours, but that is simply not the case. Minder is a Court of Appeals case from this court from 2004, in which Anoka County did not know about a pothole. But the court in that case held that a government organization, quote, does not lose immunity merely because it fails to warn about an unknown condition, and quote, reasoning that one cannot warn against a condition that one does not know exists. MnDOT is on all fours for five reasons. First, the government organization had an obligation to maintain the highways. Second, in making those policies, the government organization evaluated and balanced policy considerations consistent with the Court of Appeals case law and the Minnesota Supreme Court case law. Three, the government organization did not create or have actual notice of the dangerous conditions. Four, they did not make a decision about the allegedly dangerous spot because they did not know of the alleged danger. And five, Anoka County, like MnDOT in the immediate case, is entitled to summary judgment through statutory discretionary immunity. Now, I mentioned that Minder is almost identical to the immediate case, but it's not quite, because in Minder there was an actual danger. There was a pothole. There is no danger in this case. So there's an argument that there are two reasons why there are a danger, that the shoulder abruptly narrows. It's clear from plaintiff's deposition, and also from the video log, that the shoulder does not abruptly narrow. In fact, even if you were to accept everything appellant says as true, it doesn't meet that standard.
So, counsel, we have to accept everything appellant says is true. So why don't you start with that premise, since given we're on summary judgment, okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, thank you.
The shoulder doesn't narrow at all. Now, the paved section of the shoulder narrows after the driveway, but the shoulder doesn't narrow at all for several miles preceding the accident.
The Minder case recognizes that warning of hazards by placing signs is not inherently either discretionary or operational. Classification depends on the factors considered in making the decision. And appellants arguing the decision not to warn here was operational, not discretionary. I don't want to put words in your mouth or make your argument for you, but that's how I understand it. So how do you respond to that?
Your Honor, this case, there are a few ways to respond to that. I think dispositively and most importantly, it was not argued at the district level that MnDOT's policies were not subject to statutory discretionary immunity. At the district level, in the first line of their district court brief, appellant argues that they bring this suit because MnDOT allegedly failed to follow their own policy, not because the policy itself was not subject to statutory discretionary immunity. At the December 17, 2021 motion hearing, Boitnot's attorney is on record as having said, quote, "We love that policy. We are not challenging it at all, Your Honor," end quote. Therefore, the policies themselves are not subject it's not debated whether those policies are subject to statutory discretionary immunity. They simply are. But there's also supporting case law that says that policies that take into consideration these policy considerations, economic, financial, social, political considerations, and as I articulated with those three policies found in respondents' addendums, those clearly do take into those realities into consideration. So prioritization of maintenance activities is protected by statutory discretion. That's the Nussbaum case, and statutory immunity protects a government road maintenance and inspection procedures if they are based on a policy that balances policy objectives, such as safety and economic concerns. That is quoted in from MnDOT's brief. It is in Peterson of City or versus City of Isle and Grimm versus City of Zumbro. That is Gerber v. Nouveau. I apologize. So clearly, based on the standards for statutory discretionary immunity, even if it were argued at the district court level, which it was not, even if it were, this policy did balance those financial, economic, political, social considerations, and should be subject to statutory discretionary immunity. If I may, I would like to discuss briefly proximate cause. I understand I'm running out of time. For MnDOT to be found a proximate cause, the injury must be foreseeable and a substantial factor. While generally proximate cause is a question of fact that would be reserved for the fact finder, it is a question of law where reasonable minds can only arrive at one conclusion. And that's what we have here today. Ultimately, we have two conflicting theories. Boitnot's theory is that if a second sign, not if one warning sign, but if a second warning sign had been posted near the crash site, keep in mind that the first warning sign was less than a quarter mile before the crash, but if a second sign had been posted, then he would have ceased the dangerous practice of riding side by side. Now, Boitnot is going to argue it's not that dangerous a practice, but it is fundamental to this case that we would not be here if Boitnot had not been riding side by side. He argues that if there had been a second sign, he would have ceased that dangerous practice and he wouldn't have gone off his shoulder. So while I can't tell you it is however dangerous it is, it's the only reason we're here. So Boitnot's theory is that if a second sign were posted, he would have ceased that dangerous practice and would not have caromed off the shoulder. MnDOT's theory is much more preponderates significantly more.
We're getting into fact issues, and I think we understand your argument, and your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. So I heard, listen carefully, because in order for statutory immunity to apply, there needs to be a balancing of policy factors, social, political, economic. Not one mention of any factor that was weighed. In fact, there was an admission that there were no policy factors weighed in this case. That's fatal. That's dispositive.
So, counsel, does it matter to your argument, and you were very frank with us, indicated that your theory here is failure to warn in this specific section of the highway. Does it matter to your argument that we do have warning signs? MnDOT did place warning signs here, the windy road, the reduced speed. It's not the warning sign that, you know, and you make a compelling argument why that would have been a better warning sign, but doesn't that suggest that in and of itself there was a policy-making decision by MnDOT?
No, Your Honor, because the specific sign, MnDOT has the specific sign that should have been used here. It's got a specific analysis that it requires itself to undertake. This is what we're talking about when we say they should have applied their own sign policy. This is a specific danger.
I guess what I'm saying in a maybe a too roundabout a way, and I apologize if I'm not being clear, is, you know, there are multiple policies and the decision, and you were very direct with us in listing all of them. It's for MnDOT to decide which one applies in which section of the highway. And isn't that in and of itself a planning decision that gets discretionary immunity?
So let me just be real clear about this. MnDOT's sign policy, whether or not to place a sign, was never implicated here because MnDOT admits it never made a decision whether or not to place a sign, period. As a reason for that, it tries to articulate a policy. It's a policy that doesn't actually exist, and it's also a policy that isn't supported by any weighing of social, political, or economic factors. And specifically, what MnDOT is arguing is we only respond to issues once we are made aware of them. But that's not supported by any weighing of factors. For example, how much money does MnDOT have to allocate toward the various roads? Those are the types of analyses that the court in Conlin requires an agency seeking statutory immunity to identify and be specific about. We can't analyze just a simple, we just made the decision, trust us, we're an agency. That's the whole reason why you can't get immunity if you're taking a position like that. It needs to be probed into. We don't know why MnDOT decided not to take a good hard look at this road, which MnDOT is today admitting it knows was hazardous. And that brings me to the final point I'd like to make, which is this Fryer v. Featherstone Township case that we cited. It's unpublished, but this was in response to the arguments that MnDOT made in its briefing and is making today. In that case, this court said, in arguing it did not have notice of the road defect, appellant, in that case, that was the MnDOT, focuses on the specific hazard which respondent encountered and the absence of evidence regarding road conditions at that time. Township officials admitted, however, that they knew before the accident that heavy rains or thaws could create hazardous conditions at the crossing. Now, similar to this case, they know that this is a dangerous stretch of roadway. That's not even disputed. That's admitted today. What they're trying to claim is we didn't know about this specific issue. That there's a lot of facts in the record that show that they did know about that specific issue, and that's a fact issue to be heard by the trier of fact. But we're getting beyond the issue of immunity. We're beginning to litigate the underlying merits of this case. So respectfully, Your Honors, we ask that the ruling on summary judgment be reversed. They have not met their burden of establishing entitlement to immunity and allow this case to be fairly litigated on its merits. That's the place for MnDOT to make these merit-based and fact-based arguments. Unless Your Honors have any other questions, thank you.
Thank you very much. Case was well briefed and argued, and we will have our decision out within the statutory time frame. And that concludes our oral calendar. We will recess to consider non-oral cases. Thank you, everyone.